Lisa Zadlow has been a special correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor in Baghdad and the New Republic in Beirut. She's written about culture, politics, and the Middle East for The Nation, The Washington Post, The New York Times, The New York Observer, and Lebanon's Daily Star. Her article about cooking with Iraqi refugees in Beirut was included in Best Food Writing of 2009. Until 2003, Anya was a senior editor at the award-winning New York City news magazine, City Limits. In late 2003, she left Brooklyn for Baghdad. Living there and in Beirut, she covered the war in Iraq, uprisings in Lebanon, crackdowns in Syria, and the 2006 summer war between Israel and the Hezbollah. She specializes in stories about culture and civil society, in exploring the intersections between larger political realities and everyday activities like driving, cooking, and going to school. Her book, A Day of Honey, A Memoir of Food, Love, and War, is, in equal parts, a tale of a cross-cultural marriage and life as a reporter in two war zones. You'll savor its glimpses into a different Middle East, that of cookbooks, coffee houses, and foods of its many regions and religions. Welcome, Anya. Thanks for stopping by the Book Report.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, first the obvious question. Why is the book called Day of Honey?
It's from an old proverb that people use quite a bit, more so in southern Lebanon, I think, than in the rest of Lebanon. And in Arabic, it rhymes. It's Yom Asal, Yom Basal in Arabic, which is day of honey, day of onions. And people tend to use it as a way primarily to comfort other people when something bad happens. You say, oh, well, Yom Asal, this is a day of onions, but you'll have a day of honey soon. But people can also use it in a very cynical way to say, like, hey, yeah, you know, this is nice, but your day is coming soon. And I like the sort of multi-layered nature of it.
Well, your subject is really so intriguing, but how did you decide to tackle the subject matter of the book kind of via the dinner table?
It's a funny story. I was actually washing dishes when I had the idea. It was July of 2005, so that should give you some idea how long it took me to actually get my act together and write the book. And there had been this uprising in Lebanon. The Arab world's first peaceful uprising was actually in Lebanon in 2005 when the former prime minister was assassinated. And there was this sort of what started out as a grassroots popular uprising against Syrian rule, because the Syrian regime was then ruling Lebanon. This is a long situation that I sort of talk about and explain why in the book. But suffice it to say that people were unhappy with that state of affairs. And so they had this peaceful uprising. And I've been doing a lot of political analysis and a lot of political coverage. And it was one of those rare moments when the attention of the world was turned on Lebanon in a positive way, perhaps really for the first time. And I thought, I was washing dishes and I had this big pile of greens that I'd gotten from the market and I was about to make something and I realized, I was thinking, you know, we never see this side, even when world attention is positive, we never see this side of the Middle East. We never see people cooking and taking their kids to school, making dinner, going to the market. It tends to be glossed over in news coverage and in the sort of view that most people get of the Middle East. But there's this whole universe of private life and of peaceful life and things that people do that I think it's essential to understand if you're going to understand the larger events of war and displacement and all the other things that we associate with the Middle East. So I thought food would be a really great way to show that, because you can't get any more sort of private than food, right? It's what, you know, people sit at home at dinner and make food, yet it's also this point of intersection with the public sphere as well, because people eat in restaurants or they go to the market. And it's this way where people meet each other, people that don't necessarily always know each other. It's this way that, you know, strangers can become friends, or, you know, people can meet each other through, say, you might have a relationship with your butcher or your baker or your person who sells greens on the street, which is something that they do in Beirut. So I thought this would be a great way to show many different aspects of society.
Well, your husband is from Beirut, and you're from Bloomington, the Chicago area. So how did you two meet?
Well, I'm actually actually, I was born in Chicago, but I actually grew up in Bloomington, Indiana, which is in southern Indiana. So it's culturally like this very kind of southern area. It's very different from Chicago, which is very Midwestern, very Rust Belt. But we actually, Mohammed and I actually met in New York when I was finishing my master's degree at NYU's School of Journalism.
And such a cultural difference, how did your family and your husband's family embrace the marriage?
Well, the funny thing is, there's not that much of a cultural difference between me and Mohammed. He moved to the U.S. when he was 10 and just immediately learned English. I'm fascinated by that idea. He learned it so well and so immediately after not knowing it at all. Because he when he was in Beirut, a lot of the schools there are French, and he had actually gone to a French, so he knew, you know, like a little bit of French, and then just Arabic, which is his native tongue. Immediately learned English, and lived in New York for, you know, from 10 on. So culturally, we're actually really similar. But then his parents don't speak any English at all, and they've lived in Beirut their whole lives. So that was the real adventure. That was the real sort of cultural exploration for me. I had started learning Arabic when I realized that we were going to be moving to Beirut. So I was able to communicate with them a little bit. But it was a very steep learning curve. Because most of the Arabic that's taught in classes is very different from the Arabic that people actually use.
All right. Well, you honeymooned in Baghdad in the fall of 2003. Give us a snapshot of what that was like for you.
You know, it's funny. It's amazing to me that this was like almost 10 years ago. It's 9 years ago at this point. I guess 8.5 years ago. When I talk to my friends from Baghdad, it's shocking how much has changed. And I'm sure I'd be even more shocked if I went back and looked at how different things are. Baghdad, in the fall of 2003, there was still a lot of hope. People were still very, very, very happy that Saddam was gone. And it kind of breaks my heart to think that people are sad about that now.
Let's talk about an important part of the book, which is the food. How did you begin to gather the recipes that you've collected?
You know, mostly just from people that I knew, because it's less about the food in some ways than about my relationships with them. And I tried to include recipes in the book that had some meaning, you know, that tied to certain characters or stories or incidents that I talk about. And so I would just ask people, like, hey, you know that thing you made for me? How do you make that? And can you show me how to make that? One thing I learned really quickly is if you have people tell you how they make something, they're going to leave all the important stuff out, because most people don't think in terms of, you know, recipe writing. So it was actually really fun to gather recipes, because it gave me this excuse to say, hey, can I come over to your house and can you show me how you make this step by step, and it'll be fun and we'll drink coffee. So the recipe gathering was almost like reporting in a way.
Well, it was reporting, actually. I loved your line that food is an instant geographic indicator. Give us some examples of that.
It's funny because I was actually talking about that. There's this Iraqi guy that I met where he said, oh, you know, I can tell what sect people are from by the food that they make. And I was like, wow, I'm not sure if I actually agree with that. But it does tell you, I think what he meant was I can tell what part of the country they're from. And then from that, he was saying, well, you know, if they're from this part of the country, then they'll be this sect. It's not always true. Food can be tricky. And I think that's one of the things I like about food. It's this kind of fascinating anthropological view into not just people's actual folkways and traditions, but also to our imagination and our prejudices and our stereotypes about them. Because often the things that we think of as being true about food are completely false. And often if you look at the actual foods themselves, you'll find out, wow, they have these kind of hidden histories that tell us something about the world and about our assumptions about people. I'll give you an example. There's this famous comment that I talk about in the book. One of Saddam's relatives made this very, very contemptuous comment about Shiites. And in Arabic, he called them Ahlul Mutawwal Fasanjun. They're the people like literally the family of muta, which is this kind of temporary marriage that I talk about in the book, and fesenjoon, which is this Iranian dish that people make a lot in the south of Iraq, but also in the south of Lebanon. And it's very, very Iranian. It's you know, it's got this like very Iranian pedigree. And this was Saddam's family's way of saying these people aren't really Iraqis, they're actually Persians, which was a big sort of kind of propaganda tactic in Saddam's day.
Well, what are you working on, another book with a kind of a food theme, or what are you working on now?
It's a good question. I am actually working on, I'll say I'm working on notes for another book with a food theme. And I'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, Anya, thanks so much for joining us today. Your book is wonderful on so many levels, on the politics, on the culture, on the food, on the real day-to-day on-the-ground living. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Bye.
Bye.